Chris Scouser here with
Matt Howell. And Chris, can I ask you something? How do you feel about nuns? Oh, yes. Are you pro-nun? Are you anti-nun?
I'm apathetic to the whole nun thing.
Really?
I guess if that's your thing, then good for you.
All right.
Yeah, you know, live your life, do what you do. I don't...
All right, well, that's very big of you. Well, you know what, though?
Is the nun look like Sydney Sweeney? Because that's a different conversation.
Well, what's wrong with Nell Tiger Free? Anyway, you would think that we really like nuns because we called an audible. We are not going to be discussing Monkey Man, which I'm sure at some point we will. So first run land out there, don't be too upset at us. But we decided to go with The First Omen and Immaculate.
Why is that?
Two nun films. Well, one, because like an idiot, I had the opportunity to see Immaculate, so I just went ahead and watched it, even though it wasn't on the list. And Chris was very, I guess, upset and sort of pleased, because he did want to see this as well.
At some point, it just, yeah, the stars never aligned. And then I'm like, well, I can only see two films. And I didn't want to take, and even that was pushing it this week for me. And I didn't want to have Matt have to pull off a three-peat there, do a hat trick of movie watching within a week. That probably would have been difficult too. So I don't know. Maybe if I have time next week, I'll sneak it in with Civil War. But I don't know. I mean, what to say, the Monkey Man.
The Monkey Man movie.
We'll see.
Right.
I'm sorry. I interrupted your gorgeous intro. Please.
It's all right. This is what the back and forth is for. This is why we don't do the back and forth in the intro usually. But not today. We're doing because we're talking about nuns. And as usual, we'll have the big releases on physical media, give you our straight-to-DVD and streaming picks of the week, and then we'll do something that was a lot harder than I thought it would be, the five best horror prequels for our inventory of top fives. So,
ooh, look at you dropping the inventory. We haven't had...
AV Club poll back in the day. It's sad what that has become. All right, well, now I've brought down the mood, let's list a little bit of The First Omen. Is that what we're going with first?
I'm really disappointed that you didn't go with... enough of that nonsense.
Oh, God.
Son of a bitch.
My name is Father Brennan. I apologize for startling you. Please, sit with me. This will only take a few minutes. Your name is Margaret Dino. You work at the orphanage. You're new there.
I don't understand. How do you know that?
It's about the girl, Skiana.
Carlita?
You must be very careful, Margaret. Bad things will start to happen around her. Evil things.
No, I have to go now.
No, please. Come see me tonight. St. Rita Cloister, room 42. I'll tell you everything.
All right, Father Brennan, tell us everything. What is The First Omen all about?
Well, it's the 70s. Young American nun has been sent to Rome to... teach at a convent for orphaned young girls. As we'll see as a running theme, there is trouble afoot in the convent with the Catholic Church because it seems like part of the Antichrist prophecy is about to come true.
Yeah, no, I think that's about right. I was struck by how similar our films were in a certain vein, though I think we should avoid any kind of spoiler talk. I didn't realize, too, that probably because I still haven't watched it yet, that Nell Tiger Free, clearly a made-up name. Now, granted, all names are made up, but this one was particularly in my face about it, and I almost feel insulted by it. But she's in Too Old to Die Young, which is Nicholas Winding Refn's series that's on Amazon Prime that I have not watched yet, being the big Refn head that I supposedly, you know, I can move on because I just finished True Detective Night Country, so maybe though I do have Monsieur Spade on my DVR as well as that new Shogun show, which I'm hearing rave things about.
Yeah, I do need to see that. I'm familiar with Nell Tiger Free from, she was in M. Night Shyamalan's Apple Plus series Servant, which was also pretty wild that. And she was in Game of Thrones briefly.
Most people are. Matt, The First Omen. How does it work for you as a prequel? And what are your... how does it work for you as a prequel? Does it reset? Does it get your, as you like to say, your juices flowing again for the Omen franchise? What are your thoughts?
I don't think that's quite right, but it's close enough, so we'll let it slide. Honestly, did we need a prequel to The Omen? No. I mean, we really didn't need... I think there's even some expository, you know, back history in the original Omen that kind of tells you what happened, for the most part. But be that as it may, you know what? While we didn't need it, and I don't think necessarily that it's groundbreaking, it's overall, it's pretty effective. It's pretty, you know, it's got its moments. It's got some gore in it. It's got some disturbing imagery. The, you know, I don't know if it's the 2024 horror peak for this year. I hope not, but I thought it was pretty good overall.
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly weird and icky and unsettling enough. I think it does kind of overplay its hand a bit every now and then. I think the third act is telegraphed a bit too much as to what's going to happen to our main character there. I think it's pretty obvious, I think. But I think the technique in the film is top shelf. I think that I really get a feel like we're in early 70s, you know, pre-Omen period. I think they do a really good job. There is a great trailer for this as well that really leans into that whole 70s aesthetic. And there's a lot of little things I liked about it. One thing that really jumped out at me is how they display Margaret's hair every time she's had like this encounter or incident or something happens, how it's this almost Medusa-esque kind of, you know, long, like clumps of hair that streak out like the sun type of a thing. And there's a lot of great little specific touches that run throughout the film that I liked a lot. It stumbles for me a bit when it has to remind us that it's a prequel to the original film. And it's a real, I think, potential missed opportunity of studying, and this is going to sound, I don't know how people feel about this. Hell, I don't even know how I feel about this half the time, of doing just a hard reboot and starting from scratch instead of trying to tie itself so intrinsically to the original film, because we do get a picture of Gregory Peck, right? So we're clearly locking this in. I don't know. What do you think, Matt? Do you think it works better as a just a prequel? Because they do still set up a sequel, which I don't know if I'm of two minds of it. I'm curious for your opinion, because I'm unsettled as if I would want to just as I said, a hard reboot where we're just going to run this down again, or we're just going to do this vain offshoot instead and focusing on more of this particular story. What would you prefer?
I think I would have preferred the hard reboot. I think the ending is very Nick Fury in the end of Iron Man kind of thing.
It's putting together a team.
You know what? Although they could still do that. They could still do a hard reboot. I mean, if you just treat the Gregory Peck thing as like a fun little Easter egg, that could be, you know, and just a wink and a nod and move on from there. I hesitate to see if they make a sequel of this and it's like truly not a hard reboot and it's supposed to be happening at the same time as the original Omen. It's, I don't know how I'm going to feel about that. I don't think it's going to be as good as they would hope it to be.
No. And I would say too, the Omen, the first film, Richard Donner's Omen is, I think, really, really good. It is fantastic. And unfortunately, independent of that, I think this is one of the weakest horror franchises ever. The actual retry reboot of 2006 is just, it's a yawn. It's really bad and not engaging too. And I have an issue that there's a lot of franchises like when they tried to reboot, and maybe this will come up later, Amityville, right? That one, Ryan Reynolds, that is a really just unengaging, bad, bad film. And this, for most part, this film, most of the first Omen works for me. Where do I fall down? On hard reboot or this kind of side story? I think I'd rather have just, let's just run it down again and see what we come up with. Because again, every time they try and really tie in the original film, it felt a little ham-fisted to me. So, and there's like, they replicate a couple scenes, like It's All For You scene doesn't have the same hit that it does in Donner's original film, probably because that's the first time I ever saw that. And I think I watched it as a kid and it terrified the hell out of me, right? And I don't know. I like the use of the original score once in a while that comes around. I think it's good. I think that this film maybe it doesn't always work, but when everything kind of clicks together, I think it's quite the ride. and I think it's a lot of fun. If you're a horror fan, I think you will enjoy this. It's just that it's not consistently solid and good all the way through. It is probably, I don't know, I'd say like 70% there, 70-75% there, where it's when it's like I said, everything's clicking and rolling. It's really good and engaging and unsettling and scary at times. And good. Yeah. I think Nell Tiger Free is quite good in this. And it's I think the director really does a good job of keeping things humming along here nicely, and I think really added by Free's performance. I don't think it would have worked as well if she didn't deliver the performance she does in this film. In the end, I think, Matt, for me, The First Omen, I think it did its job. It got me interested in a franchise that I have not cared about forever. I really have had no interest in a long time since I saw the first film, and I loved it, and I kind of got into the other. I watched the other ones. I'm like, oh god, no, this isn't good. But now I'm interested again. Just don't screw it up. It's for me. It's like Jack Reacher, where I like the first film. It's good enough. There's enough for me to be interested to see where we go next. And then they just totally screw the pooch in that second film, and then just kill that franchise. Though it's got that reasonably entertaining Amazon show. But so I'm curious to see where we go from here. You've piqued my curiosity. Right? Oh, no, I actually have it here, Matt, just for you.
You have my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
So we'll see where we go from here.
Right.
Let's see where we go.
Yeah, I think overall this is a pretty successful fare. It's got a nice, you know, not only does it have the supernatural horror, it's got the religious horror, it's got some really good shots in it. I think that shot of the poster where she's praying with the candles that are arranged to look like a mouth, that was a cool, mm-hmm. neat little visual. And it's got this kind of body horror element to it with the fact that, yep. you know, it's pregnant.
Oh, it's nice and gross and icky at times. It is. Absolutely.
So, well, I mean, I think at times this thing, I really appreciate how mean it is and like how nasty it is. I think one of the things that makes it a little less successful that we maybe haven't mentioned is the fact that in the original Omen, Damien, I'm hard pressed to think of him saying anything or really having any personality beyond just this creepy little weirdo. And you don't really get that here. I mean, even the people that we're supposed to think are involved in this are very chatty. So they have a personality, which seems incorrect after watching the original and maybe part of it. But overall, you know, I liked Nell Tiger Free's performance. There's a lot of character actor that guys in this that I enjoyed. So for me, it's definitely in the B spectrum. I'm just not sure. I've kind of vacillated from a B minus all the way up to a B plus at different points here. So I think I'm going to land on the split the middle and say a B, and then, you know, ask me on any given day how I really feel about it.
Yeah, I'm in a B plus right now myself, just because, like you said, the gore effects, the body horror aspects of it. There are some big swings in this film that I think connect, and it's just undermined at times, I think, by its apparent fealty to the original film, which is a weird thing to say, but it seems to hold it back just a little bit from transcending into like this really just disturbing, unsettling whole thing. Because remember, we're making an Omen film. Don't forget that. So, but still, yeah, like I said, did its job. I'm interested in the next film. So we'll see what happens next with that. Good times, man. The First Omen. I was surprised I enjoyed it. I'd heard a lot of great things about it. So I didn't want to get too worked up and get my expectations too raised, but it seemed to work. I had a really rough experience at the theater with it, though. I had two relatively bad screenings with Immaculate. I'll talk about that there. But with this one, I had a gentleman probably had some kind of, and I don't want to pick on him because I feel bad. I'm sure I'm chasing this down at some point. But he clearly had some retention issues. He had back and forth like five times throughout the film. And he's walking right in front of me. Another time too, people had the dropsies. I heard probably four bottles dropped, water bottles dropped. I heard something. I'm like, it was really kind of just, I don't know. It was very aggravating.
The theater going experience.
That's why I can't go and sit. Monday night is always perfect for me, because if there's anybody, there's like one other person, maybe two, for the most part, right? So whatever. All right, Chris, shut up. First Omen is currently playing in theaters. If you had a chance to see it, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com, And Matt, let's talk about what's coming up on physical media this upcoming Tuesday, April 16th. These, I think, have been released as a set before, like steelbooks and stuff, but now they're going to put it out as just a, I guess it's a reduced, smaller version of this set in 4K. I have, oh, what's set here? I have the first one in 4K in a steelbook. It's really sharp. And then I have Blu-rays of the next two films. And I think that's it for me for physical media. I'll have to check in on Matt where he is in this series.
You son of a bitch!
You wish to add something to our discussion, Dr. Ryan?
Well, sir, I was just thinking that perhaps there's another possibility we might consider. Ramius might be trying to defect.
Do you mean to suggest that this man has
proceed,
come...
Proceed, Mr. Ryan.
Well, Ramius trained most of their officer corps, which would put him in a position to select men willing to help him. And he's not Russian. He's Lithuanian by birth, raised by his paternal grandfather, a fisherman. And he has no children, no ties to leave behind. And today is the first anniversary of his wife's death.
Oh, come on. You're just an analyst. What can you possibly know what goes on in this mine?
I know Ramius, General. He's nearly a legend in the submarine community. He's been a maverick his entire career. I actually met him once at an embassy dinner. Have you ever met Captain Ramius, General?
Damn. Matt, that, of course, is a clip from The Hunt for Red October. So all the Jack Ryan films are being released in a 4K set. I think this may be a reissue because of the fact that they're putting out all the Jack Ryan Amazon shows. That show has run its course. It's three seasons. And you can buy a box set of that as well. Now, I confess, I watched the first Jack Ryan season with Krasinski. It's fine. Not enough for me to get all souped up and watch the rest of them. So, but yeah, where are you in the physical media component of the Jack Ryan
over? Think I have any of them except in DVD, and it would only be the first three, so I didn't get like Sum of All Fears, Affleck's entry, or the Chris Pine entry, which I don't even remember the name of, but I do have Hunt for Red October, Clear and Present Danger, and Patriot Games.
Yeah, so that would be Shadow Recruit is the Pine version. But yeah, I had all three on DVD, then I had all three on Blu-ray, and now I just have Red October in 4K and the other two in blue. And that's my physical media collection for those. All right, so that's coming out in 4K, Matt. And then what else do we have coming up? Let's count them down. Oh, I didn't fix them! Son of a...
Number five!
Oh boy, I didn't fix them. Number five is Affliction from Shout Factory. It's just Paul Schrader's film. James Coburn won an Academy Award for this. Nick Nolte was nominated, as was Sissy Spacek. And this is about when an event shatter, Matt, a quiet small town. Wade Whitehouse, played by Nolte, with the aid of his new girlfriend, Spacek, is forced to confront his past and re-examine his life. Determined to fill the emptiness, he must either stand tall against his childhood demons or fall victim to his father's abusive ways. So there you go. They were good for four, right? Four is good.
Four
is good. Keto Lorber is releasing on brand new 2K restorations of both Fletch films with Chevy Chase. You can get a Fletch and Fletch Lives, new audio commentary included on both of those as well. You know, I've been going back and forth on these. I think I want to get the first one at least. I remember really enjoying the first one. I can't remember if I've seen Fletch Lives.
I don't.
But I will.
Think I have either.
But I will say, too, another shout-out for Confess Fletch. Mottola's one version with John Hamm, which is a little sneaky little film that I absolutely loved from a couple years ago. I think three is broken, right?
Three!
Yeah, three is broken. I mean, here's the whole thing, Matt. Let me undo the whole thing. See if we can do that. Oh, it won't let me do it. Now it'll let me do it, right? Let's see what three really is. No, won't let me do it. All right, let's move on, shall we? Let's not waste Matt's time. Rookmeister Harmonies is being released by Criterion. A naive young man witnesses an escalation of violence in his small hometown following the arrival of a mysterious circus attraction. Brand new 4K restoration on that, supervised and approved by the director, Bellatar. A 1979 feature film that Tar did called Family Nest is included in this as well as a new interview with him, too. And actually, you know what, Matt? Once again, my numbering is off. So let's go ahead and jump right to number one so we don't have to worry about broken. There can be only one. High Noon is being released in 4K, the Gary Cooper classic. And the film upset John Wayne so much that he made Rio Bravo because he thought people wouldn't desert their friend. If you haven't seen High Noon, it's great. Gary Cooper plays a small town, little old Western sheriff, and someone's coming to kill him. And he's trying to get a whole bunch of people together, and everybody's like, oh, hell no, I ain't going to do it. And it's just up to him to face off the gang there. So brand new 4K restoration, the original camera negative, new audio commentaries included as well, and more. Matt, your streaming pick of the week, I'm going to go with Revenge of the Empire of the Apes. In a distant galaxy, Achilles, it is a time of great descent and upheaval. Warring alien races fight for military and political superiority, Matt. Sabotage and assassinations are commonplace. The apes, a species spread through the stars to reduce their power and ensure their subjugation, seek to regain dominance through galaxy-wide rebellion. Labeled as terrorists, two imprisoned ape warriors must escape their captors if they're going to get revenge that they crave. Matt, I wonder if it's like a B sci-fi film coming out just to coincide with the latest Planet of the Apes film.
Could be.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
What should we be streaming this week? So, and it better be what I think it is.
Well, great. That's no pressure. So I'm going to recommend really our favorite film of last year, or at least in the running for our favorite film of last year. Certainly mine. Zone of Interest is available on Max. If you really want to watch a very unsettling horror movie, that's the one to watch. None of those nun stuff.
Yep. That's it. I actually tweeted out this past weekend. I said I've come around to Matt's opinion that I think it is the best film of the year. And like Matt said, it is currently on Max, so you can check it out. All right, let's keep rolling, Matt, and spend a few minutes talking about the other nunsploitation film. Is it nuns? I guess it technically might be. Let's talk about Immaculate, shall we? Not a lot of clips available there, Matt, from Immaculate on the World Wide Web, unfortunately. So Sydney Sweeney plays Sister Mary. That's not correct. She's Sister Cecilia. And she worked at a church that had shut down due to a lack of attendance. And they said, well, why don't you, she had been in contact with a priest. And he's like, why don't you come out here to Italy and join our convent here. We have a home for you. And you can take your vows and, you know, get freaky with the Lord, maybe. You know, I don't know. And she starts to find weird, odd things happening around this convent. People a little bit off. And I should say, too, it's a place for old nuns that are passing away. Some have mental issues, whatever the case may be, right? So they're taking care of these nuns as they move on to the next realm. And I'll confess, Matt, for a bit here, I found the film a little hard to engage with. There are some very generic jump scares. Like, literally, like, I think, I don't know if there's quite a cat jumping out of a closet, but there is some stuff that's, like, at that level. But there are some good ones, too. I will say, as a whole, Immaculate is a little light on the scares, unfortunately. But when that third act hits, what are your thoughts on Immaculate?
Okay, so, do we need to be concerned about young American nuns in Italy? Just as a broad, is this like something that we don't know about?
Quite possibly.
Yeah, it's very concerning. So, any nuns...
we got to stop nuns from going to Italy until we can figure out what the hell's going on.
So, any nuns who are listening to this show, if you get invited out to a convent in Italy, don't do it. Because if these two films have led me to believe anything, that is a recipe for trouble. I 100% agree with everything that you said. I thought this was a little rote. Wasn't anything special. Like, I was wondering where this high praise was coming from. It was fine. You know, Sydney Sweeney didn't blow me away. If we're talking about the two primary nuns in our nunathon here, I would go with Nell Tiger Free over Sydney Sweeney. But like Chris said, when the third act hits, this thing goes effing off the rails. It like basically turns into, it's not quite Malignant levels of insane, but it's up there. You know, as far as nunsploitation films go, it kind of is pretty wild. And I enjoyed that a lot. I just don't know if it's enough to elevate the whole viewing experience. Now, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy myself, but I'm worried that I'm looking at the end, that last, you know, 20, 30 minutes with rose-colored glasses, and that's coloring the rest of it.
I think that's fine, and I think it's okay to do that. I think the ending of this film is that crazy and that strong that I think it's fine, that you should be willing to deal with the rather rote, unremarkable horror scare film that, or lack of scare film that we've seen, I don't know how many hundreds of times in our lives. But the ending is great. I just wish the rest of the film was as batshit nuts as that final third of the film was. And I will say, too, I think once we hit that point, I think Sweeney's climbing a mountain here. I think that she's able to turn it on, and I think she totally sells this thing by the time we hit that final part of the film. Before that, I'm kind of like, again, the whole film is generally unremarkable. There's some interesting images that they shoot. There's some interesting little things here and there, but some of the interaction she has with some of the other sisters, one of them in particular that may be a little troubled, right? Okay, seen that before. That's fine. Oh, that's a little creepy. Okay. But you never really connect with the film until the film walks right up to you and then punches you in the mouth. And I think that's fine. I think that's good. And I think it's definitely worth checking out at least for that, Matt. And I want to avoid any kind of spoilery talk on this as well. So I think we should definitely do that. And again, I'm going to recommend you watch this. Just sit tight and wait. All right. So just enjoy it for what it is until. So I don't know, I'm sitting at a B minus right now for Immaculate.
That's wild. That's what I'm giving it as well. I think if you had to choose between the two of the films we talked about, I would definitely go the First Omen first. But this is enjoyable, and just hang in there. It'll pay off its dividends, and you'll appreciate it once you have that sweet insanity that you're seeing on the screen.
Absolutely. And I want to say, too, my other issue viewing a film, there's a weird thing where it's happened to me a couple times, and it's always just punk kids at the theater. They walk in, the film's been running for half an hour. And they walk in, they're looking for seats, where they're going to go, all that kind of thing. So infuriating. And then the other problem, to add insult to injury, is AMC framed it like a box full of buttholes. So this film, there is... it's not an insubstantial amount. There's just some subtitles in this because, again, they're in Italy, right? So you're going to get a little, what do they speak there? Latin, French, Spanish, German? There is some subtitles, maybe like 10% of the film, right, has subtitles. They cut it in half. They didn't frame it probably. Now, thankfully, it's in half, so we can still read what it is. But it's so infuriating. AMC, get your shit together. That's unacceptable. I gave up on worrying about Madden years ago. I gave up on it. But at least frame it properly so we can see the goddamn subtitles. Gee, I cut you guys a lot of slack. I give you a bunch of money. Whatever. Just let me see the subtitles. Unencumbered, which is one of my favorite words. Matt, Immaculate is currently playing in theaters, though those screenings are running low, folks. It's been out for a few weeks now. So you may have to wait. I'm sure it'll hit streaming relatively soon. But if you had a chance to see Immaculate, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. I think that wraps up the nunsploitation portion of this week's show.
Yes, it does.
Does it for me? Let me look at my top five. It does. I had nary a nun going forward for me.
Okay.
So.
I don't know. I think there might be a nun somewhere in my list.
I got a priest in one of mine. I don't know if that counts.
We'll find out.
All right, so we'll spend a few minutes to talk about our five favorite horror prequels, inspired by, of course, The First Omen, and a great little article I read by Megan Navarro over at Bloody Disgusting as well. You should go check that out. So here's one that didn't quite make the cut for me. And you know why, you son of a bitch.
Took a sample of Henrik's blood. When I saw that the alien cells were still alive, they were alive, and they were copying Henrik's cells. Replicating them. Adam saw it too.
Is that true?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what we saw. We saw something.
I don't understand. What are you saying?
That this thing can, and probably has, replicated a person.
All right, so one of the big successes of John Carpenter's The Thing is the fact that they use practical effects. Then they announce in 2010 they're going to do a reboot. Not a reboot, they're going to do a prequel. You're going to see what happened at the Swedish/Norwegian camp, depending on who you're talking to. And you're going to see what happened at that camp. I'm like, all right, The Thing's one of my favorite films, if not my favorite. It's probably the film I watched the most, and I've watched the most in my life. And if you're going to reboot it, you got to do practical effects. You have to. And they did. And then the studio exec saw it, from what I understand, said, you know what? Let's CGI this son of a bitch all up instead. And now you have this cold, lifeless kind of CGI'd monster in the 2011 Thing with Mary, what am I blanking? Stewart, Kate Wilson, something. Why am I blanking on her name? Thank you. There's so many of them out there. And it's frustrating because I think the components of that thing are there. That film could have worked. But the CGI monster is in that, just take you right out of it, and it just infuriates me. I'm waiting for somebody like Scream Factory or Synapse or Vinegar Syndrome or Second Sight, maybe our best bet, to get, because I believe they filmed it, to reassemble that film with the practical effects, include that as a bonus feature. I would pay you $50 for that set to watch it. Like a deluxe set of that, I would do it. So that clearly is a clip from, again, the 2011 prequel, The Thing. Not making my cut, you jerks. Matt, why don't you, do you want to go first or should I go first?
You go first.
Okay. My number five is going to be, I'm going to go with Paranormal Activity 3. Now, some people think 2 is a prequel. I don't really count it as a prequel because it happens like a week or two before the first one. This one, we get Katie, and I'm blanking on her sister's name, what happened to them as kids and why they're basically cursed at this point. It involves witches and a coven and sacrifices and all that kind of fun stuff. But one of the things about that film, and to this day, I still think it was a brilliant decision. People have mocked me for it, but I still think it's great. Whereas they put the camera on an oscillating fan. I love that so much. I remember being in the theater going like, that is brilliant. Give that guy an Academy Award. I love that. And it still works. I think Paranormal Activity 3, I think for me, is still my favorite out of all of them. Though I will confess, I haven't seen, I think, the last two. I haven't seen the one that was on like Hulu. I know definitively I haven't seen that one. I think I've seen the marked ones. I don't know. Regardless, Paranormal Activity 3, for that run, for the found footage films, it is up there. I really good. And as a prequel, it's very good. And I think it's the strongest film in the series. So that's my five.
Okay. All right. So then my number five, then I know I'm stealing Chris's thunder, is going to be Ty West's Pearl. I struggled with this a little bit because I don't love it. And I don't know if it's just me being a contrarian, but when I really sit back and think about it, it is still, I think, a lot better than the first one. I think Mia Goth puts on a much better performance. I think there's a lot less of horror elements until the very end, but it really kind of, her performance in that really makes the film. And I think overall it is a much better entry than the first one, even though I did have some fun with X.
Yeah. I almost did a drop the Jamesy clip on it because you mentioned Mia Goth, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be nice.
Thank you.
I was going to use pearls. I'm a star as a stinger this week, but I think I've done that before, so I didn't do it. And are you ready? Are you sitting down?
I'm ready.
Honorable mention. Honorable mention.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My number four is Trachtenberg's Prey, our Predator prequel. Now, is that a horror prequel? I think there's enough there to push it over the line to get me to a horror film. And I was remember just being blown away by how great that film was. I was not expecting much. But now after watching that movie, that's what I want to see now. I want to see a Predator in a Victorian era. I want to see a Predator like in Vietnam. I want to see a Predator in apartheid South Africa. I mean, I don't know, just the Mayans. I don't know. Give me something. I love the idea of that. And the casting is universally strong, including the dog. And just a great, probably my favorite sequel in the Predator franchise. Though I do have a weird affection for the Danny Glover one. But still, Prey is my four.
So my number four is Paranormal Activity 3. I agree with you. It is, I think, better than the first one. And I think the reason it's better is because, one, there's a little more money in it, and it's a little more competent. But I think it's really leans into the kind of supernatural element of it, and it gets pretty nasty when you got this whole idea of, you know, kids in peril and the way it kind of ends and all that stuff is pretty crazy when you kind of think about it. So I think when you take all of that together, I think it's a much better entry. Now, I have seen one of the later ones. And I honestly don't remember which one it is. Whichever one has the blonde girl in it, but that is the only thing I can remember of that film. But yeah, I think it's probably the strongest entry in the series.
There you go. I like to hear that. My number three then is a recent film, and I think what puts it over the top for me is the wonderfully deranged performance of Julia Stiles. I'm going Orphan First Kill as my three. I love the turn that film takes, man. I had no idea it was coming, and I just knocked me on my hinder, and I loved it. I'm a big fan of the first Orphan film. I've praised that movie a lot over the years on this show. Cannot wait for my new collector's edition Blu-ray to come in with that, and they just announced special features of it. It's chock full of commentaries, like five or six. It's a crazy amount. Heather Wixon does one of them, who's a writer I like a lot, so I'm really anticipating listening to that. I think I even tweeted about it. But Orphan First Kill, Isabelle Fuhrman returns as Esther. We get to see kind of what happened before she got to Skarsgård and Vera Farmiga's family, her escape from the institution. All that stuff is here. She gets taken in by a family as a young daughter, a young woman who is represents a young girl who disappeared. And she's returned to her family that hides a dark, dark secret. And it is a blast. So that's my three.
All right. That did not make my list. That is, so far, you've blown up my spot every time. But this time, that one's not going to be on my list. So my number three, then, is Prey. Now, I did struggle like Chris did, because I don't know if that's really a horror film. I would think of it more of a sci-fi action film kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know what? Some people...
It's got horror elements.
Yeah, it's got the elements in there. It's got the gore. It's got the suspense. So you know what? I'm going to put it out there. Let me ask you this, Chris. Is Prey available on 4K at this point, or is it only on Blu-ray?
No, you can pick it up in 4K. Okay. I think it's just a steelbook. You're going to pay like $30 for it. It's been in my Amazon movies list since it came out. I'm waiting for it to get to like, I don't know, if it'll ever get to $15, right. I hope, but I don't know.
All right. Well, like Chris said, I think as much as they make horror sequels, I think this premise of just a predator in different times in different cultures is ripe for mining. I would love to see a Predator versus Vikings kind of thing. I think that'd be a lot of fun, but
yes,
you know, hopefully the studios will get on board with that and Hulu will give us some more, but I really enjoyed Prey a lot.
Yeah, so it's not a steelbook, it's just a standalone release, 4K and a Blu-ray. I don't see a digital copy. That's a swing and a miss. But still, $31. It's been that way since I put it, I think, in my wish list. So if I can get that down to $19.99, Amazon or whomever, I'll pull the trigger. But $30, I can't seem to do it. Where are we? I'm on number two. All right. Number two. This is easily probably the most disturbing film on my list. It is not because of the demonic possession. I think it's because of all the stuff happening around it. It is the best film in the this franchise, and this is one of the worst franchises in the history of horror. And part of the problem is that you can't copyright a town name, so you can make as many Amityville films as you want. Amityville 2, The Possession, written by Tommy Lee Edwards, who I love, came out in 1982, the best year in the history of cinema, my reasoning, my preference, or whatever the word I'm looking for is there. We get the story of what happens to the family, why the house is haunted when the kid goes and kills his family. Why this film is so disturbing is because I guess part of the story is, now I think what the real story is, right, is this guy was a horrible father and he beat and tortured his kids, and his kids snapped and killed him and killed everybody, right? And then I guess one of the defenses is that, well, no, it was possession. Anyway, there is a lot of disturbing stuff in this film. Probably the most is there's a rape scene of the father to the mother, the father played by Burt Young of Rocky fame, who abuses his kids, beats them. And then there is a incest scene between the son and the daughter that in the original. So they cut out the rape scene, and they cut most of the incest scene out. I guess it's a lot more disturbing than the version I've seen. But, and thankfully on top of that, the good stuff is that it has a fun kind of practical effects, weird, gross conclusion. It borrows maybe a little too heavily from The Exorcist, but it is a really unsettling, dirty, dirty, disgusting little film. And it just sticks with you after you see it. So, Amityville 2, The Possession is my number two. It's something. It is weird and unsettling. It was directed by... what's the guy's name? I think it's directed by the guy who did Burial Ground. He's an Italian horror film director. And you can it has those sensibilities to it, too. It's just nice and sleazy and schlocky at times. So, good stuff.
All right. So then my number two then is a film that I've championed quite a bit on this show. And I'm starting to start become like a broken record. And I got to maybe put it into my own personal vault. But this is a film in the Conjuring universe, the prequel to a god-awful, no reason to exist film, other than the fact that you have a creepy doll in it. And somehow Annabelle Creation, which is my number two, should not work as well as it does. But it has some genuinely unnerving moments, like when the girl is in bed and her bedroom door opens, but it's too dark in the hall to see, and she's straining to see it, and then you hear something run in from the hall and then go under her bed, scary as shit. that is some scary stuff. And it fits with the theme, because there is a nun taking care of those orphans in this film, so we'll keep our nun streak alive. But Annabelle Creation, as underwhelming as most of the Conjuring films are, and kind of all of the rest of the broader universe of those films, is, I think, probably my favorite one. Even more, I think I enjoy it more than the original Conjuring.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an honorable mention for me. I'm surprised. I won't say this other one that didn't show up. It has to be an honorable mention for you. My number one then is it on the dial? Is it 60% sci-fi, 40% horror? Maybe. But Ridley Scott's Prometheus, the prequel to the Alien universe, cinematic universe, is my number one. Just, I guess, for the impregnation, or the med beds kind of abortion scene with Naomi Rapace is one of the most disturbing, unsettling things I've seen in cinema in the last 10, 20 years. And also, too, the little, when the thing goes down the guy's throat, wraps around his arm, breaks it. And then, I mean, lots of really deeply unsettling visuals in that film. And is it a little slow sometimes? Maybe. But overall, I've been a Prometheus defender from the beginning. I think it's very smart, very clever, and very, very disturbing. Yeah. So Prometheus is my one.
Not my number one. It's an honorable mention. The only reason it didn't make my list, because like Prey, I kept going back and forth. Is that more sci-fi? But now that Chris is talking about it, it does have a really nasty sensibility to it that probably does put it into more of the horror genre, but we'll have a different number one. So would have made my list, honorable mention at this point. So my number one then is obviously the film that Chris alluded to is Flanagan's Ouija Origins of Evil. Now, a prequel to a bad film about a Ouija board, right? Yes. Like, who in the hell thinks that this is going to be any good? But the wunderkind, if you will, of horror, or of PG-13 horror, of Mike Flanagan with his Netflix shows and his movie about a haunted mirror managed to pull this off yet again with Ouija Origin of Evil. And it is, again, a haunted house film that is creepy as all hell. Even though it's not very gory, it is very suspenseful. It gives you the creeps while you're watching it. And even the jump scares that are there are incredibly effective. So just by the sheer fact that this thing should not work as well as it does, it had to be my number one.
Yeah, honorable mention for me as well. Ouija Origin of Evil has no right to be as good as it is, considering how bad that first film is. But like you said, a guy who can make a terrifying film about a mirror. I mean, yeah, he's got the goods, folks. So my honorable mentions, I think we've all been mentioned.
Yeah.
Pearl, Annabelle Creation, Ouija Origin of Evil, and then I guess I opened it up with The Thing, 2011. Yeah.
I think the only one that I would also throw in there that we haven't mentioned is Red Dragon. Now, it's nowhere near as good as Manhunter.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot not to like about it. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is very old in this, and you know, Julianne Moore does her best, but she's not as good as I'm thinking of Hannibal for Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
But Ralph Fiennes as the dragon and God, why am I drawing a blank on his name, Chris? The
Will Graham,
yes. Yeah, you know, Edward Norton's turn is that, but then of course you've also got
that's a Ratner joint though, isn't it? Red Dragon, isn't that a Ratner? Ratner film?
I don't know. It could be. I honestly have not been keeping up to date with Ratner joints as it is. But you know what?
It's
got Philip Seymour Hoffman doing a turn as well as the sleazy reporter. So the kind of tertiary pieces of this all kind of work for the most part, and I really think that it has its moments. Like I think Ralph Fiennes does a really good job as a whacked out serial killer.
No, you're right about that. I think he does. It's the rest of the film that I don't think is. Yeah, no, maybe. And Norton played Graham in that. I forgot. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did.
Maybe I got to revisit that one. Good times. All right, folks, that's it. What's your favorite horror prequel? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Just an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. Matt, what's coming up next week on The Big Shoe?
Well, one of the big releases of the year. Another one drops as we get closer and closer to summer, but this is Alex Garland's Civil War, which should not be polarizing and have concerning audience members in the least.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to look in more into this. He's been saying some really stupid stuff, and I'm trying to figure out how much I want to engage with that or not.
What has he been saying? You mentioned that before, but I couldn't find anything.
Nah, just more kind of run-of-the-mill, like, you know, polarization is bad, and people, we got to come together, everybody, you know, they're all both parties are the same type stuff, and we got to get past this, and nothing infuriates me more than anybody saying, oh, no, so they're both the same, what's it matter? They're not. They both suck, but they're just different levels of suckitude, and it's a big difference between the two. And also, too, I guess he said he's going to exit filmmaking now. I guess it's more like he's just going to switch to doing screenplays. So I don't think he wants to direct anymore, which would be disappointing. I mean, I still love Annihilation. I love all of his films. So we'll see how things turn out with Civil War. And that's going to be a fun episode too, because that'll basically be a live show for the most part, because I am traveling all next week for work. So I'm going to get home, we're going to record, and then we're just going to release that show, basically, is how that one's going to go. So enjoy that god-awful mess whenever that one drops in a week from Friday. In the meantime, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Do a search for The First Run. Scroll. Eventually you'll find us. Head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. It'll help other people find the show. Head over to thefirstrun.com. You can find archives of all the old shows. There are port cards there. There's a little player. You can just start it up and start listening to these shows to your heart's content. And I guess that will be that. So we're going to go ahead and take an extended break. We love you all very much. And we will see you soon. See you about what? About a week? Sound good? Week? Yeah, week works.
Now, how long have you had these pains, Mr. Barber?
Now, that's Babar.
Two B's?
One B. B-A-B-A-R.
That's two.
Yeah, but not right next to each other. I thought that's what you meant.
Arnold Babar. Isn't there a children's book about an elephant named Babar?
I don't know. I don't have any.
No children?
No elephant books.